In tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Hello and welcome to episode 75 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. You know what? That sounds like a container ship as well. You're back from the fridge, Mark.
I'm back from the fridge with my container, my little brown container.
Who's the third? Surprise, drum roll. Introduce yourself.
Hello, Lauren's here too.
Hey!
Straight off of training.
Oh, that's better than being straight off of training.
So you are back from Berlin.
Well, speaking of Berlin, yeah, I'm back from Berlin and the S-Bahn.
But we're not going to talk about travel, right?
Nope. I'm in San Jose. That's all I'll say.
Oh,
right. You're in San Jose, from Berlin to San Jose. Did you just like bypass
via Indianapolis?
So did you hit any night spots while you were there? I mean, we're not talking about travel now, but we're talking about Berlin, right?
So I did look up cabarets, but didn't find any good shows that were playing, or at least not shows I wanted to go see. So, but hit a lot of touristy spots and, you know, got to the wall, got to, Checkpoint Charlie and all the known spots. So it was a good trip.
Did I see you put somewhere as well saying that it's your favorite European city then so far?
So far. Now, I haven't been to England or the UK in general, Nigel. So
that's all right. No offense taken.
But yeah, so far, I have to say Berlin was just a really cool city. The architecture was amazing. Everyone thought I was German. They would come up to me and speak German. And then I'd be, you know, that jerk American, like...
Is it because you were wearing lederhosen?
Yes, that is why.
Lauren in lederhosen in Berlin. That should be a play. God. That could be a cabaret show right there.
That could be indeed.
Someone get out their Photoshop.
Hey, you know what? I know this is like totally changing the topic, right? But speaking of Photoshop, my Microsoft Surface Book arrived this week. And you know what made me think of it, right, is because I'm starting to learn the Adobe products like Photoshop and Illustrator because it is so freaking damn powerful. It's like, it's the sexiest thing I have ever bought in my life. I mean, I waited for it.
I thought your segue there was from me being really sexy in lederhosen to
that's right as well.
Microsoft Surface.
Yeah, I should wind that back, and that will be the lead in. But no, deadly serious. Honestly, I had it on pre-order, and Microsoft Store, like store.microsoft.com, is pretty crappy compared to Amazon or, in fact, any other e-commerce site that I've ever bought anything from, right? All it's ever said is like order in process and will ship by the 18th of February. So I'm like, really, ship by the 18th of February? And that status did not change. And I'm like, what does ship by mean? Does ship with a P? What does ship by mean? Does that mean like that's when it leaves the warehouse, or will it ship to me and be here on the 18th? Anyway, my daughter, so the 18th of February was during half term week here. So like the kids were off school for the week. So the doorbell rings at 8:15 in the morning and I'm like still in bed and I'm like, really, could this be the Surface Book? So I, you know, pull my jeans on, stick a t-shirt on, open the door. Oh, hallelujah, the Surface Book is there. And I mean, I'm ranting a bit, but I waited for it for ages. And I don't know, I was kind of like, this could either be awesome or a massive letdown. And it is like the absolute chazing. It is just... Well, I can't say. Honestly, I'm just in love with it more than that. More than any photos of you in lederhosen could possibly. You know, it's just. Anyway, so anybody who's thinking
it's a high bar.
Yeah, it is a high.
Do you have stickers on it yet?
I do. Yeah. So I've got our big podcast sticker on there. I've got a rancher sticker and I've got a Docker sticker. But there's loads of open real estate at the moment, so I'm pretty excited to start filling that up as well. Actually, yeah. I'll say this, it's got one massive drawback, which is a huge drawback for me, actually. Because it's got, like, you know, it has that detachable screen that turns into a tablet, yeah? So it's, like, it's kind of, like, all shiny, like a telephone screen. It's, like, glass, yeah? Mm-hmm. So when I've got my polarized sunglasses on, I can't see it.
Oh, it's good to, like, the squares or whatever?
Yeah, it's just, like, I can't see anything when I put the sunglasses on. It's as if the screen's gone off. And I spend like all the time out in the back garden in the summer when it's sunny with my laptop on.
Are you in the garden right now?
No, I'm not. So I'll try not to.
yeah, and you've never been, Lauren. Yeah, the sun never shines there.
No, you're right. It doesn't really actually. The thing is, because it only shines so very rarely, when it does, I'm like, even if I'm working, I am taking the laptop out there to get what I can get. Because, you know, if I trust that we're going to have a barbecue at the weekend, or I'm going to take a day off work next week, it's guaranteed to rain those days. So, yeah, when I'm in the office and working, if it's sunny, I always take the laptop outside. But I won't be able to do it now, so I'm a bit sad about that.
Well, so you just named the least favorite part. What's your most favorite part of it?
The list
is... Bam.
It's so powerful, I'll say that, right? It's got 16 gig of RAM in it. It's got like a Core i7 processor, 512 gig solid state drive in there, and a discrete GPU. So it's like the flipping wind, right? The detachable bit's sexy. It's just fast. It's slick. The keyboard is just a pleasure to type on. I'm like, oh my goodness. So it's the Bizzo.
Good to know.
It is good to know, yeah.
We've got to get you finding sexier products to buy, though.
You're probably right about that. Well, yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's
there's all kinds of things you can buy in the internet.
Yeah. Should I type sexy products into Google? Is that suggested?
Give that a try. Let us know. If you drop off, we'll know what happened.
So in my office here, to my left, I've got my golf bag, which is a sexy piece of kit as well, with my clubs in. And to my right, built up, actually, but not strung, I've got my bow, as in like a bow and arrow. So I think I've got some sexy stuff in here. But despite how sexy my golf bag is or my bow and arrow, the Surface Book, honestly, it's like, it is the...
I don't know, Lauren.
The Cameron Diaz.
What do you...
Well, let's not forget what do you about think? Your hair.
I mean, we go from sexy stuff, he's talking about golf bag and bow.
Yeah.
I think there's a coming of age or something that needs to happen.
There's something. You're right about that. And you said my hair, Lauren, as well. You've just reminded me. And I know that we really are here to talk about technology. But you guys ribbed me about my hair last week. So
I didn't rib. I'm all for the hair.
Oh, are you? It's gone.
I'm on board. It's gone. No.
It's gone. Yeah. I was so upset by what you guys said.
Yeah. I was all for it.
Did you give it a suck cut?
No. So... It's my wife's been, honestly, she's been badgering me for ages. She hates the beard and she hates the hair, and the beard's not going. So, yeah, I'll let her take the clippers to my hair.
What if?
And I didn't speak to her for a while after.
So, wait a minute, like, shave your head and keep the beard? That's a great look.
So, I did keep the beard. I didn't really shave my hair. It's like, it's number 12 on top, but it's like dead, dead short compared to what it used to be. It's actually kind of respectable now, whereas it was a bit of a disgrace before. But, you know, turning this onto a technical thing, right? To be fair, right, to have any kind of like, you know, if you were to walk into a room of like DevOps-y type people, if you've got hair like that, that's like wild and messy and you've got a bit of beard action going on, you get a bit of kudos like instantaneously, you know, people will give you a nod and a wink and what have you as you walk in. Whereas if you walk in like, I've got a bit of a side part now, they're like, who's this geek? So, yeah.
That's my question. Like, what if your technology prowess was in your hair? You know, like...
Samson.
Like Samson, yeah.
Oh, man, I can't start a container anymore. Not since I've had a haircut. I don't know what's happened.
People will stop buying your classes, taking your classes.
Oh, I know. It's terrible, yeah. I blame my wife as well.
Yeah.
Never mind. I've still got my sexy Surface Book, right?
Now, if you could just give that to, you know, give you a haircut or be a gun... Did you, by the way, did Surface come with a gun?
It did not, no. But I have got an orange Nerf gun right next to it as well. I've got all the gear in the office here.
Yeah, you do. It's getting worse the more you drink, Mark.
So have you guys got anything going down before we get into the news?
I guess I'll mention I've been using Project Fi recently for the last month or two, I guess, which is Google's answer to cell phone carrier, basically. So I dropped Verizon and used Project Fi. You have to get a Nexus phone, so I got a Nexus 6P.
What's that like, by the way?
It's gigantic. And if anyone who follows me on Twitter knows that daily I complain about girl pockets. and nothing. Girl pockets are basically without function. They're just there for design.
Hey, I know. My wife makes me carry a purse and a phone and stuff. It's ridiculous. I want some girl pockets myself. Anyway.
I've broken phones because of girl pockets. Oh, yeah. And lost wallets. But anyway, so yeah, it's gigantic, but I like it. It's a nice phone, other than it's huge. You can get the Nexus 5X too if you're interested in something smaller, but I wanted the battery power and all that. But it's cool because with Project Fi, I think it's like a $10 or $20 base pay, and then you pay $10 per gig. So basically, my bill is like $50 a month. But if you don't use all your gigs, they refund you that money. So that's pretty awesome. You can also make wireless phone calls and texts. So if you're in another country, it's all free as long as you're on the Wi-Fi. So far, I'm a big fan. The only place it hasn't really worked is my hometown, Toledo, Ohio, just because of lack of, well, not where I live, so it's okay, but lack of maybe 4G. But besides that, it's been awesome. In Indianapolis, in Berlin, in San Jose, it's been great.
So it's totally like just a normal 4G phone, yeah?
Yep.
Just, I guess, Google owns some of the bandwidth or whatever you call it. I wouldn't even know what you call that. It's not like they've got, because didn't they have this thing in certain cities in the States where they were putting up like Wi-Fi routers everywhere? And
yeah, they still have that. So that's Google Fiber. But this actually works with T-Mobile and Sprint towers. They made some deal with T-Mobile and Sprint. So whatever the best signal is, it'll go towards that tower. Or if you're on the Wi-Fi and the Wi-Fi is working better, it'll automatically switch to Wi-Fi. As long as you're logged in, of course, you know, authenticated. But it's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff.
So you're digging it, yeah?
I am, and I'm digging the price more than anything.
All right then, Lauren, well, that sounds interesting. We've obviously got nothing cool and funky like that over here in the UK. Well, actually, I don't know, maybe it sounds like Virgin Mobile or something like that, piggybacking off of the carriers. I don't know. Anyway, never mind, you're digging it, you're rocking it. That's cool. Maybe a nice segue onto more technical stuff then. So I've only got three things to talk about on the technical front here, right? So one, Oracle to buy Revelo Systems. Two, IBM, so they're inking some cloud deals with the likes of Apple and VMware and GitHub and some other people. So driving their cloud business forward, I think, a bit there. And then Docker announces Docker Data Center. And those are the three things, to be fair. So should we hit them in that order?
Sounds good.
Now, I'm no Revelo expert. I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong here, right? There's some kind of cloud on-ramp type company. They'll let you take, is it like ESX-based or VMware-based workloads and run them in the public cloud, like on Amazon Web Services and stuff like that. Am I in the right area there? Do either of you know?
I think you're exactly right. It's not just VMware, though. I think it's multiple hypervisors.
All right.
I know a lot of people that use it for labs and demos and things like that. So you buy time, basically, to create your little lab environment, and it's all cloud-based. So you can give your little demos in front of customers, or you can practice, you know, new technology, if you like. That's been a big part of it. The cool thing about this is it's going to let Oracle on-ramp people faster, because now they can virtualize any sort of hypervisor. So now it's not going to be a blockade if someone's running VMware stuff. They can go ahead and put that in the Oracle cloud without having to do any major conversions of the VMs.
All right. Okay. So you can take your existing like on-prem virtual center controlled VMware estate and just start migrating what onto... I'm guessing Oracle Cloud, but Amazon Web Services, Google Compute Engine, stuff like that probably as well.
Well, I mean, since it's just
Wait a
Oracle,
minute, we're talking about Oracle here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So it's just Oracle. So into the Oracle Cloud, yeah.
Just real quick, though, in the past, I mean, it has allowed you to go to other cloud platforms, right? So are you saying that because Oracle's Oracle, we wouldn't be surprised if it became just an on-ramp to Oracle Cloud, yeah?
That's how the article read to me, anyway, that
right,
this is
okay.
What's going to be.
That's how I interpret it, too, I mean.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised, to be fair. I don't want to get myself into trouble, but I'm not a massive fan of Oracle. So, yeah, that would seem the Oracle thing to do. Do you know, by chance at the moment, how is it, like, priced, and how does that work today?
That I don't know. I didn't I don't remember reading anything about the pricing or, I mean, it's not working today as far as I know. They just acquired, right? So I think there's going to be some time before.
Oh, sorry. I meant like as in pre-acquisition when I say today. Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
what's Revelo priced at today?
Yeah.
I don't know because I get it for free as a VMware vExpert. So I'm not sure what the actual pricing is.
You can probably kiss goodbye to that then, I bet.
Right.
Whatever the price was, it'll be 10 times that.
Well, apparently Oracle is saying, or at least the CEO, which I think his name is Tamir, T-A-M-I-R, he's saying that Revelo will still run as it has been for everyone. You know, whether that's true remains to be seen, but we shouldn't notice that big of a change. So it's a purchase maybe based on the technology, and they're going to integrate the Revelo technology into the current Oracle Cloud. I'm not sure.
Oh, hang on a sec. I'm sure we just said we interpreted the articles that we'd read to say it's just going to be focusing on Oracle Cloud going forward. And then we're talking about a canned statement here saying business as usual, nothing to see, everything's the same, right. Yeah?
Right.
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying there is those are kind of, I always assume they're just canned statements, aren't they? You've got to say stuff like that in a time like this when you're going through an acquisition.
Don't want people to worry.
Exactly, yeah. Don't want everybody to bail.
You don't want to lose the customers.
Yeah, stick that in your pipe. So speaking of Oracle and pricing, right, there was something else, slightly different tangent now, but there was something else in the news this week, or maybe it was last week, about, I think, was it Mars, the confectionery company, Snickers and all that jazz? They had taken Oracle to court, and I think it settled out of court, but it was over, I think Oracle had done one of their infamous licensing audits, and it said, hello Mars, you owe us like in excess of 100,000 US. So they went to court and it settled out of court, but I don't know what they paid. But anyway, the article was quoting all kinds of people that work in the channel and stuff that say, apparently Oracle, I think we all know they're quite aggressive on licensing, and I think they're well within their remit to be like that. But that there have been many cases, well, I say many cases, there have been cases where people have been stung for over $500 million owing Oracle in licensing fees. I mean, how can you just, hello, there's a $500 million bill, thanks, pay it or else. I mean, that is like, how do you go to the CFO with something like that? Or do you just grab a beer before you go and see him, spruce up your resume?
One would think that for a bill of that size, that there was a definite intention to not pay Oracle at some point.
But do you think then following on from that, there's a definite intention to move away from Oracle as well, where possible? Because I think there are other options out there these days that are viable, right?
I mean, is it fair that Oracle is still doing this kind of tax on virtualization? I don't know. As, you know, an old VMware admin, it was always just a pain in my butt that SQL, a Microsoft SQL and Oracle, you had to pin it to certain VMs. And I mean, get with the times, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I know in my last job when I was a full-time employee somewhere, we had separate VMware clusters for our Linux estate because we ran Oracle there. And if we didn't, then apparently we would have been charged like, I don't know, exponentially more for our licensing. I mean, to your question, Lauren, I think, yeah, it is fair that Oracle can do that. I just don't think we should let them.
Right.
As in, like, I think customers should vote with their feet and walk and start using other technologies. I mean, you know, a company is within their rights to charge and do whatever they want in my book, right? But there comes a point where, you know, you shaft your customers so much and you bleed them so dry that there's going to be resentment there and they're eventually going to move away from you. And we talked about this a bunch in the past. As people move to the cloud, surely they're going to look at it as an escape route from Oracle. And I wonder, you know, in 10 years' time, I could be totally wrong here, Oracle could be like the biggest cloud in the world in 10 years' time. But I just wonder if in 10 years' time there will be like a shell of the company that they are now and people will have exited them big time.
Well, and I'm surprised. I mean, you said going to cloud, but what about going to containers? How are you going to convert all these into microservices and making, how do you license that? model.
Yeah, I don't see any new apps.
Well, you charge them 10 times as much. I mean, it's quite easy.
I mean, don't get me wrong. They're a massively successful business and all of that kind of jazz. I just think you cannot speak to an Oracle customer these days that's happy with them. Somebody's going to shout me out on that, and there will be the occasional customer, but the vast majority of them don't.
And I think the whole thing with Revelo is about Revelo understanding all the VMs that Oracle's running on, so they can upload that analysis to the cloud, so Oracle can charge more.
Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah, we're shutting it down.
Revelo, Oracle's new billing app.
Yeah, new auditing and billing tool. You quite often have to read deep into the contracts of some of these licensing agreements and stuff to find the small print and say, you know what, if we're not careful here and if we don't deploy and design our environment properly, we could have like really, really high bills that we're not expecting. I mean, I've been there before when it's been like budgeting time and license renewal and stuff. It's boring stuff to do and it is painful stuff to do and it takes time. People haven't got the time to do that or the will to do it. You know, I was a technologist and I wanted to work with tech and deploy tech and stuff. Yet I had to like go through licensing with a fine tooth comb and stuff. It's just not fun.
Yeah. So I think what's going on here is that Oracle's trying to expand their business. If they can find enough companies that owe them an enormous amount of business, Oracle will just acquire the company. Well, you owe us $500 million. How about if we just buy you? Yeah.
Can you imagine that? Like all of these companies, you read the small print, they're actually all owned by Oracle now. In fact, the podcast's going to be owned by Oracle probably, yeah?
I mean, it depends on how much they're paying. I can be bought.
There we go. Hey, I'm going to buy Lauren.
I didn't say it was cheap, but...
I was just about to outbid you, but if she's not cheap.
Oh, bad.
Anyway, sticking with the cloud, right? From one big behemoth of a company, from Big Red to Big Blue... IBM have been busy maybe enhancing existing deals that they've got with the likes of Apple and VMware and GitHub. So I know at least on the VMware side of things, now the ability to run a little bit like I guess we were talking about there with Revelo systems, the ability to run important infrastructure like VMware components and stuff like vCenter and NSX and vSAN and stuff like that on the IBM public cloud, right? Not so much sure what they're doing with Apple there, but again, it's an incremental improvement and an incremental step forward, in my opinion, for IBM's cloud, which I increasingly see cropping up on, you know, supported cloud platforms with different technologies that I play around with and, you know, the kind of things that we read in the press and stuff. IBM's cloud is getting mentioned more and more and more.
So the thing that's interesting about this with Apple and IBM is that it looks like it centers around Swift, which is not Swift Stack, which is, you know, not storage, but it's Swift. Development tools are, Nigel, Lauren, are you familiar with what Swift is?
Is it their new, it's that new programming language and development environment that they came out with like maybe about a year ago or something?
Yeah.
I know a bunch of people that were iOS developers were switching over to it.
Yeah, it hardly seems like it's anything mainstream for Apple. It doesn't seem like it's front and center with their, you know, devices business and all that. Yet here it is, and they're putting together this what looks like a pretty sizable deal with IBM, you know, to get exposure for it. And that makes you wonder, is Apple, you know, preparing to compete with Google, you know, VMware, Amazon? I mean, what's going on with this?
Yeah, I tell you what I think is interesting as well. Are IBM, well, take it here then, IBM are the first to partner with Apple with this kind of a deal with Swift, yeah?
I don't know.
I believe so.
So, I mean, if they are, that's potentially quite forward-thinking of IBM as well. So two quite interesting angles there, really. I don't know whether I feel particularly qualified to comment on any of them, but...
If they're going to have a cloud, they have to compete with AWS. They have to compete with Microsoft. You have to compete with Google. Where are they going to get, you know, tools and languages and all this stuff from? I mean, could it actually be possible that Apple technology is going to help them do that? I mean, that just kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, it's not the usual for Apple either, is it? Like, I mean, IBM are this big enterprise partner and all what have you, and Apple have never really delved, well, particularly successfully in that space. They've always been consumer-driven, so it's kind of like two... opposite ends of the stick.
If we're talking about kind of opposite ends, the VMware and IBM you know, meeting here. VMware, of course, does have a cloud solution. They have a few cloud solutions if we include the whole Federation, and Dell included now too. We heard, you know, a few weeks ago that they're backing off of vCloud Air and all of that. So this is kind of a good opportunity for them to have a cloud story to tell their customers, and then a good opportunity for IBM to have that new market that VMware really is involved in, more of the on-prem stuff. So, you know, it's probably a good deal for both of them, I imagine.
How long do you reckon a deal like that is in the works for before it gets announced?
I would like to say a long time, but yeah.
Probably a year or more.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Because you got to stand up all the infrastructure and all the interfaces and support and everything. I was wondering if this is VMware's kind of waving the white flag over their own cloud offerings a little bit anyway. At least that's my opinion, right? Personal opinion there. But whether this is like them saying, for public cloud, we know we can't compete with like the big guys, but IBM are respected in the enterprise and they'd be a good partner for them there. Yeah,
I think there's mutual benefits.
Who do you think's got the most benefits out of that deal? Is that a better deal for IBM or a better deal for VMware?
VMware could get eaten up, and I think it's going to be interesting. Like,
I think too, yeah.
With, and not that VMware is going away or anything like that, but it's interesting where their stock is now and what they're announcing, and with the EMC Dell deal, and then now this deal with IBM. So, you know, I'm wondering, are they going to get eaten up kind of by all these huge companies? I don't know.
It's fascinating to think about, you know, IBM, you know, making run to be in the cloud business. You know, we always talk about the big three.
And, you know, I think IBM understands that they're, you know, the fourth one, and now Oracle's in there too, right? So IBM's got to make a bunch of moves to try to have a relevant cloud business because they've been investing like crazy. I mean, if the cloud business does not work for IBM, can they continue to exist? We've talked about this on this show in the past, you know, how difficult it is for IBM, you know, the fact that they lose money, you know, they've been losing money and well, maybe not losing money, but their profits are certainly down. And, you know, the company's been shrinking, they're laying off, and they're, you know, they've got all of the smarter planet stuff, all this, you know, artificial intelligence stuff. If they don't have a cloud to do this with, if they don't, you know, then what are they? Where are they? If you had to compete with Amazon, Microsoft, and Google, right, what would you do, right? The first thing is you have to spend a lot of money. The second thing is you've got to partner with hip companies, cool companies, leading companies, and you just, so I think it's really a good move from IBM to do this. Whether or not it will work for them, whether or not they'll have services that people want to use, you know, remains to be seen, but it looks like they understand what they have to do and are doing it.
Yeah, I think we've often talked as well, haven't we, about there being kind of two different types of public cloud, so, certainly in the infrastructure space. We would, you know, quite often say Amazon Web Services is usually the first choice for kind of hip new startups and people developing cloud native apps. But then Microsoft Azure is really popular with those guys in the enterprise. Now, if IBM is going to try and, you know, drive itself into one of those two, the much more logical choice is to compete with Azure in that enterprise space where they've got like the experience and stuff like that. And I mean, if this turns out to be, you know, a good feature or a good set of features with VMware there's probably no better company to partner with from IBM's perspective than VMware. Because, I mean, they must exist in every single Fortune 500, Fortune 100 company out there, right? And to be able to say, well, look, we know you're looking to start leveraging the public cloud. Well, we're already a trusted partner, and guess what? We work with VMware. They're a trusted partner. It starts to look like, assuming they execute on it well, right, a pretty good story in that space, and they need it to start making money as well, because as awesome as Watson and everything and all the smarter planet, greener planet, all that kind of stuff is, they need to start, you know, generating more revenue and helping that bottom line, because I'm fairly certain that they have been losing money. And for longer than a lot of companies have been in existence, to be fair. It's been a downward spiral for a while. And they need a turn of, not good fortune, but they need some of their moves to start paying off.
Yeah.
This could be one of them.
Yeah, it could be. But I do wonder, you know, how it works out for the customer perspective, right? So, I mean, AWS, stable cloud, right? Not going anywhere. Google, probably not going anywhere. Azure, not going anywhere, and they've got an established cloud business. Whereas IBM, VMware, EMC, I mean, you name it, any other cloud solution, it's kind of all been up in the air with different acquisitions, different, even Cisco, you know, I don't want to leave them out, but different acquisitions, different things. So are customers going to jump on the bandwagon, Oracle?
Who knows? Hey, I tell you what, I've just logged on to cloud.docker.com right now, okay? I was playing with it earlier today, and I thought I'd seen. SoftLayer is the IBM cloud, right? It is, yeah. So you can link Docker Cloud with Amazon Web Services, DigitalOcean, Microsoft Azure, SoftLayer, and something called Packet. No Google Compute Engine there, but IBM is on the list. So, I mean, that's just one technology, right? They're starting to crop up. They are. They're going to be a. Sorry, I did hijack the conversation again there, Lauren. But I just thought that was worth noting. That's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, feel free to hijack.
Mark's editing this week. He can
jack away
out.
Oh no!
What? I take it that means exactly the same thing in the States. Yeah.
Well, it's usually a different preposition, but.
Oh yeah. What else have we got? Docker earlier this week announced its data center product. First off, right, it's a commercial offering as far as I'm aware, which I think is fairly significant because we tend not to hear enough about how they're going to make money. So they've come to market with this data center product, which is effectively a grouping of their existing products with one new product on there. I mean, it does cloud deployments and stuff as well, but it's really squarely aimed at on-premises data center deployments. Making it easy for operations teams and stuff like that, which is kind of interesting because to me, they've always been a little bit like Amazon Web Services, you know, a popular company and a popular technology for the hipsters isn't the right word, but, you know, these cloud native guys and stuff like that. But now I wonder whether they're thinking, you know, in order to make money and stuff, we need to be on the ground in the enterprises where people will be willing to shell out their cash to have a, you know, to be able to sleep at night knowing that they've got support on stuff. So I don't know, they seem to be making a pitch to get into the data center and get onto IT operations and stuff like that.
You know, the fact that it's a data center offering, really more than a cloud offering, you know, it just came out that Uber is moving a lot of their stuff from cloud to, you know, a data center. So just like you said, to keep things kind of under thumb or whatever that phrase is. So I think it's interesting that Docker is kind of taking that into account as well.
We've talked as well in the past saying that Amazon Web Services and all these public clouds can be a cheap on-ramp for you as a, well, not on-ramp, but a cheap way for you to start a new business and stuff like that. No CapEx investment, it's all OpEx and stuff. But as you start to ramp your business, then quite often it's actually cheaper to run it on premises in-house again. So yeah, maybe that's one of the angles that I guess a lot of Docker users might be startup companies that are starting to grow and say, you know, our Amazon Web Services costs are getting high. What's the alternative? A bit of a data center going on here. Well, how do we manage it? Maybe there's that. I also think as well, you know, the fact that they need to get into like the pharmaceutical companies, the financial houses, and people like that that pay money to have supported software, but they can't put their crown jewels out in the cloud as well. I think that's got to be a big play for them too.
The one percenters.
You know, we haven't talked about Apple privacy and terrorists.
Hey, why don't we?
Yeah, I think we should just go there.
Lead us out.
But the headline on the New York Times says, Apple is said to be working on an iPhone even it can't hack. Right? This is fascinating stuff, right? So the government, U.S. government and Apple are in this spat, this dispute about whether Apple should help the government figure out how to tap into the phones of the San Bernardino shooters. And Apple, of course, has been resisting it. And now they're saying, not only are we resisting it, we're going to make it impossible for the loophole that the government's trying to exploit to exist anymore. And it has to do with, operating system phone upgrades and updates and that sort of thing. And Apple looks like they're going to close the door on it. So even if the government asked Apple to help them, Apple would not be able to. This is fascinating.
I mean, absolutely is fascinating. And I get where they're coming from, right? So like you said there, Mark, to say, hey, we actually can't help you. But let's be honest, nothing is unhackable at the end of the day. I mean, how many companies have been bitten by saying almost silly things like that in the past? I get that they've probably got a different angle on this, and they're not coming out to say, you know, we've got this thing, it's unhackable. It's maybe a bit of a spin on what's going on with the government at the moment.
I also wonder how much of it is kind of thumbing their noses at Google, you know, like with the ad stuff, how Apple's developing ways to block ads and Google's kind of embracing ads. And ooh, now we've got the privacy where, you know, Google is, we all know Google is always watching and who knows what they're reporting. But, you know, is this also part of marketing?
An ad is basically spam. And, you know,
the ability
to block spam and an ad aren't very far separate, right? I mean, you want to block them both. So if Apple develops ad blocking technology for iPhones, how does that impact Google's revenue? Right? What if Google's ads can't be seen by everybody that owns an iPhone in the future, right? The iPhone blocks.
Yeah, but according to Diane Green, the Google Cloud platform is going to be so big and so minting so much cash that it won't matter about ads in the future. So who cares, right? No, I'm just kidding.
According to Larry Ellison, the Oracle platform is going to be.
That's true. Yeah, but if ads were blocked and didn't get through on iPhones, that is a sizable part of the market. That is, mm-hmm. Good grief.
Oh yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
Think of what that does to Facebook, to Google, everybody. You know, the new media companies that are, you know, making all this money on ads, you know, Google prints money from ads. What if all of a sudden, you know, they generated half to a third of the revenue because people aren't seeing it? Then that, you know, it's interesting because, you know, of course, Google and Apple compete with phones. And if Apple, I mean, it would be strategically advantageous for Apple to block Google ads because it would really hurt Google's ability to compete with Apple in the phone business.
Man, the sky would definitely fall if Google's ad business went through the floor.
Yeah, Google would have to actually think of real things to do.
Hey, actually, speaking of ads, my wife just uninstalled Facebook from her phone just yesterday because she was sick of all of the ads that were coming through. She's like, I just have to scroll through my timeline. I'm like, scroll three or four screens before I actually find something that's not an ad. I don't use it so much, so I don't notice, but people don't like ads, do they? It is proper spam.
Yeah. I mean, they're using your searches and everything too, so it's like creepy spam because it's stuff that you've looked for, or, you know, it's definitely creepy.
But speaking of ads and Facebook, just reminded me, did either of you see that kind of viral video? I actually did see it on Facebook, of the guys that were at a beach using the shower, and people were putting extra shampoo on their hair when they weren't looking.
Oh my goodness.
I was laughing so hard, and I had to come out, and I was in the bedroom.
That was a funny video.
To show my wife, and she's like, oh yeah, I've already seen it, and we sat down and watched it together. I promise you, I have not laughed that hard for like 2 or 3 years. I don't think I was nearly sick. I was laughing that much. I'm going to have to tweet a link to it if I can find it from the podcast Twitter account. But that was hilarious. You haven't seen it, Laura?
I picked up a tweet on that.
No, I haven't.
Oh,
it's good.
No one sent me men showering videos in a while.
Right. No, well, I'll send you a link. It is absolutely hilarious. Oh, hey, I will tell you one last thing. I did finish reading American Gods. I had the 10th anniversary edition, which was like the longer version. I'm assuming it's probably the same one that you listened to. Great book, actually, isn't it? Very, very, some interesting.
Yeah, really fun.
Yeah, so I was thinking, actually, to give a bit of a tech sort of theme to it, is that as we move into more DevOps-y type roles and stuff, like, for instance, for me, okay, moving into more container workloads and more DevOps type workloads, am I bringing the storage gods with me? Yeah. And what kind of like legacy old world gods do we bring with us into the new DevOps world or the new cloud world or whatever? Yeah. So, yeah. But no, it was a good read.
Well, we bring the devious gods of intractable corner cases.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you bring those gods to containers, it's really going to put a hurt on
containers. And can you bring the bickering vendor gods of the storage world Oh, it. I mean, the storage industry was one of the worst for that, right?
I guess I know something about that.
I guess you do, yeah.
Yes.
Well, unless we've got anything else, I am going to see if I can watch that shower video one more time. That sounds bad, doesn't it? And send a link to Lauren.
Yeah, so I can watch men shower too.
Watch it on your sexy surface.
Yeah, can I watch it if I don't have a sexy surface?
Yeah, probably not going to be as good. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not that kind of shower video.
No. Nope.